Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I'm Tony Bruschi. Welcome. We hope you've enjoyed our coverage on the trial of Alec Murdaugh. This is a look back at some of the key moments and conversations that we've had over the last several weeks regarding the case.
This is a podcast that seeks justice. Justice for the lives stolen by those in society that hide amongst us every day. Hidden in our towns, cities, and countrysides, the places that we work, and sometimes in our very own homes. This is Hidden Killers.
Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us. Be sure to press subscribe where you download your podcast so you don't miss any of our episodes and breaking updates. Very interesting interview we have for you today. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Always interesting to get your insight, Robin. I want to jump right in here to the Alec Murdaugh case and a very interesting observation that you've made about this. Why both were murdered instead of just one? And on that note, I want to talk about the body language that Alec Murdaugh has been displaying in court, what he displayed when he was in that police car the night of the murders. It's very interesting, I guess you could say, unique maybe, because it's not necessarily what I think most of us would expect from someone mourning the loss of their loved ones. The ways, the extremes that he seems to be going to in some cases, under very bizarre contexts of what's being brought up in court. What are your thoughts on all of that?
Yeah, you know, I was reviewing everything again, and my friends that are on the behavior panel, they were going through the body language of Murdaugh, both sitting in the patrol car and then in the courtroom. And the thing that's really struck me about this case and him is when I look at human behavior, I'm kind of going for more of the macro, you know, from literally origin stories from someone when they're growing up all the way to present, because that tells that story of who they generally are going to be for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. And Murdaugh is a guy in chaos. I mean, his life is nothing, has been nothing but chaos for a very long time. I mean, his business dealings. So we can put aside whether he's guilty or innocent of any of these things. I think everyone can really reasonably say his life is chaos.
Sure.
And when you have chaos and disorganization all around you, it's not surprising if there's more chaos, including suspected murder. Mm-hmm. You know, because what has gone well in his life that hasn't gone sideways? I mean, whether he's a lawyer that's been disbarred or, you know, bilking money that he's accused of as a businessman, and even as a father and a husband, there's been nothing but chaos. And so when I was looking at what the prosecution is saying as a motive, that he murdered his wife and his son for distraction from his other legal issues that he's got going on with the money. What struck me with that statement was, well, why two? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't one do it? And when you're looking at his reaction in the courtroom when the son was discussed, it was interesting to me that he seemed, it seemed genuine, but at the same time, you know, you look at his behavior in a patrol car. I don't know. There's just so much chaos in there that is like, why two? And was it botched like everything else he's done has been botched? So that's what really popped in my mind on that. I was also curious as to why the prosecution was going that, you know, not even thinking about that.
It is interesting, and I've been watching his body language a lot, and you know this area far better than me and most people. What have you been seeing specifically when we're talking about the patrol car and in the courtroom as to how he's reacting to the questions being asked or the statements being made on the stand?
Yeah, boy, it's an area that I focus on, but I'm not nearly as an expert as some others are. I've also been watching and listening to these other experts as well. And the thing that struck me is anytime you have an emotional, and I have an emotional reaction to something, I then kind of sit back and digest it. And I wasn't really comfortable with his behavior. And then I ask myself, why am I not comfortable with that behavior that I'm seeing? And because it looks so rehearsed to me. It looks like he scripted things out. When you listen to him in the patrol car, that is not someone that's recounting, I was just witness to this thing and it ends this huge traumatic event. He literally sounded like he's rehearsing something he's saying, describing things. And whether it's in the patrol car or even in the courtroom, using a tissue to wipe away the tears that he didn't even have, that was interesting, you know. And so using a tissue as a prop, knowing that he is a lawyer that knows how to play to people's emotions in the types of cases he was working as a defense lawyer, it made me say, it looks a little too rehearsed to me. And it's not the, you know, because then you reverse it and you use the, what's called, I call it really deep disciplined empathy. Place yourself in that situation. What would you do? How would you react? What would your emotions be? And that generally will give you a good indication of why you might feel uncomfortable with someone else's.
It has been extremely interesting to see the way that he's been reacting. More specifically, even in the courtroom, I think, then in the patrol car, when he's being questioned that night, it seems very misplaced on where, on the level of his emotions, depending on what's being talked about. One of the things that I have observed is almost extreme sorrow or frustration in him, more so when testimony is coming out about his financial crimes in areas that he was trying to hide more than anything. It's almost this frustration of being caught in some of those areas, which we know very well is fact. He did these financial crimes and not being able to cope with the reality that people know this. One of the most dramatic things that I've seen him do was not just crying the crocodile tears when they're talking about his family. He was literally rocking back and forth with his head down like a five-year-old in the corner for timeout, specifically when they're talking about his financial crimes and things that he got caught at. Those emotions almost seemed more authentic to me than the, oh my God, your son's brain was blown to the ceiling and fell to the ground, which I think to most people would be the most dramatic testimony that you would be sitting there just in shock of. It was finances that seemed to almost elicit the most strong and almost authentic emotions.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing that was really striking with his rocking motions and his behavior in these different, they're covering different aspects of him, whether it's the financial crimes and then the murder side, you see two different kinds of behavior. And it's, you can literally see his thought process is changing. When I was seeing and observing him and they're talking about certain topics, whether, you know, definitely surrounding the financial crimes, but the murder as well. When I saw the rocking, what really reminded me was him kind of, it's a pacifying nonverbal behavior as well as an acknowledgement, like internally as he's processing the information. You can literally kind of see him working as like, all right, I prepared for this. And all of a sudden his behavior changes when someone comes at him with something he hadn't thought of or he hadn't prepared for. So yeah. I think he really, in his chaotic mind, pre-planned out a lot of things. And what happens is that we're seeing things he hasn't pre-planned or prepared for, which, again, if you're innocent of everything, you're going to be congruent with everything across the board.
I 100% agree. I believe some of the emotions are authentic, but they're not necessarily the emotions that I think most of us would be feeling. They're coming from a different place than grief and sorrow, it seems.
Great way to place it, you know, to state it, you know, coming from a different place and a different thought process. But yeah, he's definitely changing up thought processes throughout this. And you kind of see him sometimes limitedly being in father mode. And that's why when they talk about his son, as opposed to his wife or his wife and his son, the emotions do tend to shift on that. And that's what gave me the initial impression was the son intentional or was that a mistake in that chaotic life that he's leading?
The only thing that can run through my mind on it being intentional for both of them, number one, he knew they were both down there. We heard him on tape right before it happened. Whether he expected them to both be down there at that time or not is a another question. And he just realized, well, I have to do both because why would I not? Because one would, you know, be witness to the other. The only thought process I have there is, could it be Maggie for the money? Because she independently had her own income, her own wealth that was in her name. If she's gone, he inherits it and he needs the money for his defense on the financial crimes, because that was all about to come to light. And could it be Paul because of the boat crash? And Paul, I don't want to intentionally speak ill of the dead, but he seemed like your typical teenage fuck up that would, you know, just kind of be out there causing trouble. It was like a worse version of Murdaugh, of Alec Murdaugh, or maybe like what he was when he was young, just doing dumb things and then not being held accountable for it or being shielded by the parents. And was there a lot of concern there that, you know, this could come to court at some point and he could screw that up too and really screw his dad over at the same time? And if both of them are eliminated, not only does he get a lot of pity out of all of this, if no one finds out it was him, but he gets the money and he eliminates a person that could potentially be a dagger at him should that end up going to court.
You know, those are great, fantastic theories and rationales for behavior. Mm-hmm. But what I think is going on here, people are giving him a way too much more credit than he should have.
Okay.
I mean, if he was this good at planning things out, he wouldn't have the chaos in his life that he has. I think everything he's doing is complete off the cuff mistake. I think he comes up with a half baked plan in everything he's done, executes and executes poorly. I mean, what? So past patterns of people's behavior are generally really good predictors of future ones. Mm-hmm. Everything he seems to touch is half baked and he's got horsepower behind it. And then it goes sideways. This just seems to fit that pattern. Those are great arguments you make, and I totally agree for a really good, sane, rational thought process. I don't think he has it. When has he displayed it before that he does?
That's true. That is very true. The defense right now trying to paint him as this kind of aw shucks character, showing videos of him at birthday parties and, oh, guys, you didn't have to do this and all that. And he played that very well in front of his family. And really did come across that way professionally as well. He also was the aw shucks character at his firm with people that he had known since childhood on staff and stealing millions from them at the same time and putting them all at risk of financial crimes as well, of being complicit into some of these things. So is it that far of a stretch that this aw shucks BS of a character that he displayed professionally was also what he was displaying at home, that there was a dark side to him, not only financially, but also personally as well?
Definitely. And from these are learned behaviors and they're observed behaviors that someone has from a young age. We carry the thread of our lives through everything we do. And no one is born, unless you have a severely, and we've said it before in other episodes, a severely broken brain, learning, you know, saying, I'm going to do life like this. These are observed behaviors that we've seen from people and individuals around us that make it appropriate in our lives to treat people, organizations, and situations like he has. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's easy to have the genetic and biological, oh, shucks, you know, type of mentality at the same time, bilk people out of millions of dollars and think it's completely natural and have natural human behavior around it. Because to him in his life, that's normal. But it goes back to, I think he just causes such complete chaos because he doesn't have a great follow through plan on how to make things work properly in a healthy way to good resolution for everyone involved. I mean, when has he ever done that?
It's like his compass has probably been broken since childhood.
And he doesn't even know it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's conditioning that is normal to him. And this is all coming to light. And suddenly the rest of the world is saying, you don't have the power that you once did. Here's how screwed up everything you've been doing is. And that may even be a shock to him that this is how the world works, because he's been living in his own world for so long.
That's such a great point. I think his sense of reality is completely off from what reality actually is around him. Reality is our own context that we build from the experiences that we have. Mm-hmm. And I think he's having such a shock and awe of wow, this is actually not right. This is not, that's, I, so we're seeing a lot of chaos in the brain. And that's why we're seeing so many different, I think, aspects of his personality coming out, because he's got repetitions of being this type of person and having these types of reactions with people, and it's not working. And so we see frustration, we see scripting because he's done it before and that worked before. Why is it not working now? I mean, you're seeing a brain and a human being in total disbelief and chaos as well.
I want to talk about the jury for a little bit. There's been a little bit of scuttle, and it really could just be, you know, people need stories, and let's take it from this angle. But there has been a little bit of question, and there has been some reprimands from the judge to some of Murtaugh's family. I don't know exactly what those reprimands were. I'm going to be talking with Jennifer Coffendaffer a little bit later on about some of those. She seems to be more knowledgeable on that. But the bomb threat the other day, at the courthouse, there's a lot of bombs being dropped, you know, figuratively, in this case about Murtaugh. Is there a level of trying to influence the jury or make the jury scared for their own well-being while this is all going on at the hands of the Murtaugh family? I don't know if the bomb threat is connected to them or not, but they're learning, you know, the lengths that this family has gone to. And if they had any knowledge of the past of the Murtaugh family, the shady lengths that they've gone to shut people up at as well. Do you think there's anything out of the ordinary here where they're trying to make a juror want to remove themselves for the trial out of fear? And at some point, maybe even making this case have to be restarted?
You know, given the chaos of this family, I don't put anything by anyone. I mean, it was, you have no idea. You can be completely right, because this whole situation is just absolute chaos. I mean, that's why I think they're having such a hard time prosecuting, you know, coming up with a reasonable theory for a motive, is because it's half baked. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just, nothing makes sense. And so having, you know, trying to do jury intimidation by people or family members or people that are allies, okay, it wouldn't surprise me. But I really like the fact that, you know, the jury is able to see not just what he's suspected of being a murderer, but seeing all the other back history. So they're hopefully being able to come to their own conclusions that we are right now, is that is, this is a very chaotic situation with a chaotic family, and it's a pattern of history of behavior. So hopefully they're taking all that in, including, you know, any potential feelings of intimidation or something. So they're kind of seeing it play out before them.
What a circus it is. Robin Dreeke, retired FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Always a pleasure to get your insight here on the program. Thank you guys for listening. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts, wherever that is. And if you like the program, want access to the show, I'm really kind of not on it right now. What a circus it has been. Robin Dreeke, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Thank you so much for joining us. Always so exciting to get your insight on this. If you like the program, be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any of our breaking updates and discussions on the cases that we are following for you right here. Get a commercial-free experience through Apple Podcasts right now as well. You can follow me off the air on Twitter @TonyBPod. For all of us here, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.